Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. The System, a new documentary series now airing on Al Jazeera America, covers some familiar ground for Academy Award-nominated filmmaker Joe Berlinger. A look at the criminal justice system in America, the eight-part series covers topics like mandatory minimums, eyewitness testimony, false confessions, and fickle forensics, demonstrating inconsistencies in the law that have led to innocent people being locked up for years. Berlinger's other films include the incredible Paradise Lost series about the West Memphis Three and Some Kind of Monster, which caught Metallica on the verge of a painful breakup. And it's my pleasure to welcome Joe Berlinger back to the roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
How come you wanted to go back to criminal justice in this series?
Doing the Paradise Lost series, which was three films over two decades about, you know, the West Memphis Three, was kind of my wake-up call. I mean, the reality is that not every case gets that kind of HBO treatment. And every time those movies air on HBO, I am flooded with letters from people claiming to be wrongfully convicted, either from inmates or relatives. And, you can't make a documentary about everyone who writes you, of course. And nor do I believe that everyone who writes me is necessarily innocent. But just it's my experience that there's a crying need out there to shed light on these stories of incompetence or worse that happens in the justice system. So the opportunity to do an eight-part series where we could, in the course of a year, highlight 16 different cases as opposed to, you know, the long-form documentary approach, you know, takes years to unfold. It just, you know, I just feel like it's my civic duty, and it's kind of the duty of every American to be more concerned about our justice system.
You know, the Paradise Lost series, I think, ultimately, the three were released under what's called an Alford plea deal, but they're out now, and it's hard to imagine that happening without the series of films. And as you mentioned, you know, you can't do a movie about everybody, but does that keep you up at night, the fact that there are other people who maybe, you know, if there were a popular film series, could be exonerated?
It haunts me. I mean, you know, the shocking numbers of cases. I mean, I think if more people got involved with the criminal justice system and understood just how easily it happens, I think it would make people's heads spin. You know, the prosecutor in this country and the criminal justice system has, you know, the very unique power to take your personal liberty away. And because prosecutors operate under, you know, the doctrine of prosecutorial immunity, they're not reprimanded when they make mistakes. And look, most prosecutors, most people in law enforcement, most people in the justice system, I believe, are good people who believe in the job they're doing and, you know, take their oath very seriously. But human beings are human beings, and mistakes are made. And, you know, it's shocking just how, you know, the numbers make your head spin. You know, over 300 DNA exonerations in the last decade, and those are just the cases that have, you know, been able to get the attention of the authorities and advocates who push. But generally speaking, you know, as we saw in the West Memphis case, as we saw in Jeffrey Deskovic's case, the state digs in its heels, the authorities dig in their heels and prevent DNA from being tested. So the fact that there's been over 300 DNA exonerations, that's a miracle, because you're fighting against this apparatus. And most cases don't involve DNA, so that's the other goal of this series, is we actually specifically didn't focus on DNA because so many other wrongful convictions happen without the benefit of DNA to prove exoneration. And to me, you know, one of the most interesting statistics is, you know, for example, we did an episode, again, involving Deskovic on, you know, false confessions. And what we have found in DNA exonerations, where science is used to exonerate, there, in 27% of those DNA exonerations, there's been a false confession as well. So the cases where there are false confessions or flawed forensic science or problems with how photo or real-life police lineups are executed, you know, eyewitness identifications, all these things just result in, you know, way too many mistakes. And I think kind of the underlying theme of the series, even though we specifically don't do a death penalty show, to me, the fact that so many people can be caught in the system is just crying out for, you know, the complete abolition of the death penalty. And people get hung up on the moral argument. Does the state have the right to kill? You know, and then, of course, victims, family members. You know, I have tremendous sympathy for any family member of a murder victim. You know, and, of course, they want justice. And in the minds of some of those people, justice means, you know, an eye for an eye. And I don't want to tell those people they're wrong, and I don't want to get into a moral debate with people about the validity of the death penalty, and you don't even have to. You don't have to take that step, because when you see how easily it is for somebody to be wrongfully convicted, and we see how Damien Echols, for example, in the West Memphis 3, languished on death row for almost 2 decades, and thank God there was attention on this case because that prevented the executions from actually happening. But there are so many cases that don't have, you know, 3 HBO films behind them, or Peter Jackson or Eddie Vedder or Johnny Depp, all the people who step forward to help Damien Echols. And you just see how easily it is for somebody to be killed who's innocent. And that to me is the loudest argument for not having the death penalty.
Let's go back to the case of Jeffrey Deskovic. People in our listening area may or may not remember. First, tell us what happened. This was in Peekskill, how he got caught up into a murder case, and then what happened.
Yeah, well, he was a classmate of a young, you know, teenage girl named Angela Correa, and she was horribly murdered in the woods behind the school. And Deskovic was a friend, and the police started, an acquaintance, I should say, and the police started interrogating him because it seemed as if he had an unusual interest in the case. He was, you know, driven from Peekskill to the Brewster police station, hooked up to a lie detector test, administered by a fellow officer who was posing as a, you know, objective polygraph administrator, you know, but it was actually somebody in law enforcement. He was left in a room without a parent or a lawyer, you know, and after 7 or 8 hours of aggressive interrogation, he was, he collapsed and kind of admitted to the crime, you know, in duress, because he felt like he just had to say whatever they wanted to hear, which is common in false confessions, in order to get out of that situation. He went to trial. There was also some DNA that was tested and excluded him, but not brought up at trial. And he fought for years to have that DNA tested. And the previous Westchester County DA, Janine Pirro, blocked that DNA from being tested. She then went off to run for political office, I believe, and the new Westchester County DA, Janet DeFiore, I believe in 2006, came in, tested the DNA. Not only did it exclude Deskovic, but it pointed, you know, they entered that DNA into this, you know, computer data bank that's been building for the past decade, and actually pointed to another perpetrator who was sitting in prison for yet another crime, and he was finally released after 16 years of wrongful imprisonment, because that killer, Jonathan Bandler of the Journal News, actually went to interview him once he was identified, and on video he admits to Bandler, committing the crime. And, you know, to me, the double tragedy of this is you have a guy, Deskovic, who spent 16 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. There was DNA that could have been tested for a long time. All attempts to test that DNA were blocked. And in the intervening years, while he was in prison, the real killer killed somebody else, a school teacher. And that's the cost of wrongful conviction. Not only does somebody get put in jail for something they didn't do, which is everyone's worst nightmare, the other cost is that somebody else was killed because the real killer wasn't put in prison. And then there was a real tangible cost. You know, there was a lawsuit against Westchester County for fraud by the medical examiner and the DA. That was settled. There was a lawsuit against the Legal Aid Society for insufficient legal representation. There was a lawsuit with the city of Peekskill. And there's still a pending lawsuit with I believe, Putnam County, you know, Deskovic settled for, you know, a multi-million dollar settlement. And to his credit, you know, he's using that multi-million dollar settlement, you know, part of it, to, he started a foundation, the Jeffrey Deskovic Foundation, and he pursues claims of wrongful convictions generally without DNA, because I mean, he'll do both cases, but, you know, a lot of entities out there like, you know, Innocence Project only do DNA cases. And the real trap, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to focus on non-DNA situations in my series, is that it's the non-DNA cases that have gotten short shrift.
And just back to Deskovic for a minute, rather devastatingly, the real killer in that case says he never knew that anyone else had been, you know, pinned on it, unfortunately, for years while Deskovic is sitting in prison.
Yeah.
I want to take the other side for a second. The series is called The System, and I think perhaps people in the justice side of it might say, yeah, but these are isolated incidents. By and large, the system works well. We're getting bad guys off the street, and you're always going to, you know, maybe find one case that goes against the rule. What do you say to that?
Well, look, in theory, I do believe we have the greatest justice system, and I do believe the system often works, but statistics don't lie. We have major issues that need addressing. We have the highest incarceration rate in the world. You know, I believe we have more prisoners in our prisons than Russia and China combined. Or another way to look at it is we have 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prison population. It's disproportionately racially biased. You know, 1 in 3 African-American men can expect to go to prison in their lifetime compared to a much lower percentage of white men. And does that mean 1 in 3 black men are bad? No. The system is rigged against people of color and people on the lower, you know, socioeconomic scale. You know, we've had failed drug laws where, you know, people are serving life sentences in some cases for low-level drug offenses. You know, the system is out of whack and needs addressing, and I think people on both sides of the it's no longer like a Democratic or a Republican issue. I mean, I think people on both sides of the aisle really think that issues need to be addressed. You know, but does the system work most of the time? Of course. You know, are most people in law enforcement, you know, honoring the badge and the oath they took? Of course. Is it a hard job? Absolutely. You know, are most people in prison there because they deserve to be? Of course. But the numbers are pretty staggering. I mean, again, over 300 DNA exonerations. That's 300 innocent people. Well over 300 innocent people spending, you know, decades in prison for crimes they didn't commit. That number in and of itself should, you know, flip people out as to how we can make things better.
I want to end on a slightly lighter note. I'm a huge fan of Some Kind of Monster. It's an incredible film. And while I was preparing to speak with you, I saw that Metallica says today it has like 1,000 riffs already working toward its next album. For anyone who's seen that movie, it seems incredible that group is together today. I guess it's been like 10 years since you made that film, and I just wonder what your thoughts are on the state of the group today and how the hell they survived that film in that era.
Yeah, actually, in fact, I was with the band in Toronto as they premiered their new film, Through the Never, and shot a little behind-the-scenes footage in which I had them reflect back on the past 10 years, and I'm cutting a little kind of update to Some Kind of Monster and adding that because it is, you know, this is the 10th anniversary year of that movie. It's you know, the band reached that point where many rock and roll bands disintegrate 10 years ago, and I think because they worked through their issues and figured out how to be a collective again, and most importantly, you know, these were guys whose fame was fueled by, you know, classic sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And, you know, as they were hitting their 40s 10 years ago, getting married, having kids, you know, they wanted to keep, you know, the music going, but they didn't want to live that lifestyle anymore. And that's a tough thing that a lot of hugely successful bands have to grapple with. And I think they masterfully navigated those waters, and they've come out really strong on the other side. And I think they are one of those bands like the Rolling Stones who, you know, they figured out how to stay together as a collective and how to rid themselves of certain addictions. And I think they'll play, you know, for as long as they want to play, you know. And, you know, I'm proud that the film actually had something to do with it. You know, Lars, you know, back in the day and still today says that, you know, the making of Some Kind of Monster kind of forced the therapy to actually work because they felt like they were speaking to each other through the cameras and saying things that they probably wouldn't have said had the cameras not been rolling. Like, I think Lars's quote was, you know, the cameras were like a truth serum.
I think that explains a lot on why he hasn't spoken to you.
We're just in limbo, and the longer James chooses to stay away from dealing with us, the further we drift apart. And I just feel so disrespected.
So the fact that they trusted us to come in and document that very tender time, and it was actually helped enable them to work through their issues, you know, I think gives the film, you know, a little extra, you know, I guess, I don't want to say importance, but just a little extra meaning to those who were involved at the time.
Well, that's Joe Berlinger, and he is the director of The System with Joe Berlinger, which airs on Al Jazeera America on Sundays. It's an 8-part documentary series. He's also behind films like Some Kind of Monster and the Paradise Lost series. It's been just a pleasure to speak with you. I'm a huge fan of your movies, and
cool,
keep making them.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Take care.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.